Gators Breakdown, the Gators Fan Podcast, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown Podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. And joining me for this episode is Will Salmon from The Athletic, running on a little bit of fumes from the trip from Miami to Gainesville overnight. So, Will, I can't thank you enough, man, for the dedication and everything it takes to get here on this episode of Gators Breakdown. Game's over. You do all your post-game work and drive up to Gainesville.
David, man, it's the last game of the season. I'm not going to miss out.
Absolutely, absolutely. So here we go. You know, of course, the season started against Miami and then ended in Miami, where the Gators didn't have their best showing in the Orange Bowl, but didn't need it as the Gators defeated Virginia 36-28. And we'll get into all the specifics in just a bit. But, you know, Will, it was a up and down night for Florida, went into halftime feeling good, even when team wasn't playing their best, but really couldn't ever really put the Cavaliers away. But Florida did what good teams do and won their 11th game of the season when they couldn't put it all together.
Yeah, it wasn't great, especially defensively. It was not a great performance. But, you know, you never really thought that they were going to lose the game. At least I didn't feel that Florida was ever going to lose. I never felt like that they were about to lose the game or that they were in jeopardy of really letting it slip away completely. It just wasn't as crisp as I think a lot of people wanted it to be or figured it would be. This was a game that pretty much always was, you know, 13, 14 point favorite for Florida. And before a kickoff, they rose to about 15 and a half points. So people were expecting a blowout, not exactly what occurred, but it was pretty clear that Florida was the better team. It's just that, what we kind of thought may happen, which was Bryce Perkins and Virginia's offense maybe having some success moving the ball, particularly in the pass game against Florida. That was kind of like the only thing that I thought may have happened that was going to sort of be a negative for Florida and end up happening that way. And that's what kept Virginia in the game, of course, because there was just no way that Florida was going to be stopped by Virginia. Virginia was not going to stop Florida when Florida had the ball and just did not have enough to keep up. And we knew that was probably going to be the case more often than not if these two teams were going to hook up.
Yeah, absolutely. And with that, ESPN Stats and Info put out this stat that Dan Mullen is the first coach to win a BCS/New Year's Six game bowl game in each of his first two seasons at a school. Gator fans, I know looking around on Twitter last night, this game itself, not necessarily happy with the performance, but a big majority out there, the Gator fans, still happy with how it played out, getting the 11th win of the season. Dan Mullen getting 21 wins in his first two seasons and, you know, putting it together where, you know, Florida's in the spotlight now. Florida's a fun team to watch. Florida is not a laughing stock of the SEC, of the country anymore because of what Dan Mullen's done these last 2 years, Will.
Yeah, man, it's like you put that game in a vacuum and it's like, yeah, it's not pretty. But when you look at it the way that you just did and sort of like the big picture view, it's really hard to kind of just say like, OK, yeah, it was sloppy and this or that. It's really hard to kind of nitpick it because, you know, it's a bowl game. You know, and that's usually going to happen a lot of times. People aren't always going to be playing that crisp style that you want after a month or so off. And we kind of saw that with Kyle Trask a little bit early on where, you know, for whatever reason, his touch just wasn't really there. His feel for the game or the pressure just wasn't what it was after, you know, in the middle of November or at the end of November where he was playing 3 or 4 games in a row or at least didn't have the wide of a gap that he had in this occurrence, of course. So that's just, you know, nitpicking, I guess, but I'm with you, man. It's like if you look at it from the big picture, the larger scale perspective, you gotta like where Florida is at if you're a Florida fan, because it just bodes well for your future. Because again, there's nobody else that has done what Dan Mullen has done in getting to and winning the two New Year's Six bowl games at a new school. That says a lot. And you know, he did kind of beat a dead horse with it, but it is hard to do what they just did, and that is get to that 11th win after you won 10 the previous year, particularly in the SEC. So, you know, that does although it gets beaten, like I said, to death a little bit with Dan, because that was something that he just continued to talk about throughout the whole year, starting at the beginning of the year. You do got to give them their respect and got to give them their credit for actually doing that and pulling it off.
Yeah, absolutely. And you really couldn't ask for a better start under Mullen in his first two seasons. And, you know, even with an 11-win season, it still felt close to even more than that. There's a strong foundation to build on. There's the realization that Florida isn't where they ultimately want to be, but I think Gator fans can feel pretty comfortable about where the program is in getting there. There's a lot to feel good about.
Yeah, I think that's like the biggest compliment, right? Is that after these two successful seasons, it's like, okay, the expectation now is back to, it's not good. I mean, I know the expectation's always there, but like the realistic expectation has matched the overall expectation, I guess, of it just not being that quite good enough, or what the goals and aspirations are isn't sort of on the same level of what's occurring yet. And that's kind of a good thing if you're Florida, just because you want that to be higher than just New Year's Six bowl appearances and wins.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll get into the specifics of what happened in Miami for the Orange Bowl. But before we do, remember, you can find Gators Breakdown on news4jax.com/GatorsBreakdown. You'll find all the episodes there, as well as News4Jax coverage of the Gators. Also listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or YouTube, like so many of you are doing live right now. You can tell if you're watching, I'm not in my normal house studio, in the offices of Channel 4 here. So got to change some things up with the holidays and all that good stuff. But when using all those services, please share, rate, and review the show. Let Gator Nation know what they're getting with Gators Breakdown. So we're looking at it. You know, it wasn't a glimpse into the future all that much with this bowl game, especially on the offense. And that's not necessarily unexpected or a bad thing. You know, sometimes in bowl games, they can give you a look into the next season with your players that show up that'll be on next year's team, and they'll go on to have a great bowl game. But it was the seniors that got the job done in Miami, and it was great to see LaMichael Perine go off after not having the season many expected us or predicted him to have. He was the MVP of the Orange Bowl, really the difference in the game, led the team in rushing with 139 yards on 13 carries and two touchdowns, started the game with the first score in that 61-yard touchdown run, second on the team in receptions with five catches for 43 yards and a touchdown there as well. Will, much like the Peach Bowl last season, Perine was a huge part of the game plan, put on a show, became the first player in school history to post a rushing and receiving touchdown in multiple bowl games. And Percy Harvin is the only Gator in school history to post a rushing and receiving touchdown in a bowl game. So, Perine in some high esteem there.
No doubt. Virginia dropped a couple of guys back in their defense. And so that, I thought, allowed for some bigger gains in the run game, which was a change for Florida, of course, from what we saw all year. So I think that was part of it a little bit. But also, LaMichael also made them pay in the passing game too, when, you know, he got pulled motioned out of the backfield for that touchdown one-on-one. And pretty much everybody that's seen a Florida Gators game this year knew what was coming. It was going to be a pass his way. But he not only makes the catch, he breaks the tackle and then scampers the rest of the way for the score. And it just shows you just how valuable and how good he is across the board, where, you know, you could have counted on LaMichael Perine not just to be a good rusher at the running back position, but a guy who could catch passes, a guy who could block, a guy who could do a couple of different things. And that's what makes him so valuable, and that's what makes it very hard for Florida, or really any team that has a guy like him, to replace him, because it takes time to kind of become that kind of player. And I'm not sure – I don't know if Damian Pierce is at that level or not. I guess he's the guy that they're going to be asking to do some of the heavy lifting without LaMichael Perine next year, of course. But it took him a little while to get to that level, and I think it's going to take Damian Pierce, as much as he's flashed over the past couple of seasons, it probably take him a little bit to get to LaMichael Perine's level, just because of how good and how underrated I thought LaMichael Perine has been throughout his career. Because even for me, it's like, you know, you look at it and you say, okay, LaMichael Perine probably is good enough to be on the all-decade team for Florida in the 2010s. And not a whole lot of people give him that credit, or not a whole lot of people realize that. But for me, it's a shoe-in. He's as good as it gets.
Yeah, and with that, you mentioned the big runs, and because of what Virginia was doing on defense and dropping back and trying to defend the pass more so and getting Kyle past passing lanes. I mean, what you saw was, at least what you saw was he could get to the second level and make that happen. You know, I'm pretty sure Virginia felt comfortable in their defensive front, manhandling the Florida offensive line. And you know, for the most part, you know, Florida was living off the big plays in the run game, that 61-yard touchdown run. But at least you saw points where this offensive line, I guess, maybe through some bowl prep, you had some weeks to get better, get some things figured out along the way, and being able to bust the big runs, because the big run doesn't happen if you're tackling the backfield. So the offensive line still got to make their blocks and get Piran to that second level where there weren't a whole lot of defenders there.
Yeah, constant for me, David, was Kyle Pitts's blocking. I thought he had a really big on the edge, had some really key blocks on a couple of Michael's biggest runs. I thought his growth, you know, we kind of said to myself, okay, am I really buying into him becoming a better blocker over the past few weeks of the regular season? And, you know, I kind of went back and forth with it, but this game really solidified that for me. I thought he showed some really good improvement. I know Virginia is not an SEC team. It's different, but still, man, he made some good blocks. And better yet, he had a very strong idea of what he was being asked to do, which is a great improvement from where he was several weeks ago when it looked the opposite some of the time.
All right, so it wasn't that much of a glimpse into next season in the passing game in regards to the wide receivers either. Four of the five leading receivers were seniors, Van Jefferson, Piran, Tyree Cleveland, Freddie Swain. Kyle Pitts was the other receiver in the top five that'll be back next season. Jefferson led the way with six catches for 129 yards. That's a career high, and one of those being a 53-yard catch and run. Clunky performance. You mentioned it, Will, from Kyle Trask here. So something just looked off, and he pretty much played his worst game of the season here in the Orange Bowl. I don't know if the time off cooled him off a bit. The time off gave Bronco Mendenhall time to come up with a scheme to take advantage. That was clear. That part of it was clear. Getting his passing lanes and being able to bat down the balls, you know, take away the quick slants for the most part from this Gator offense, and what they were able to use those quick slants off the RPO, being able to try and hit that slant off of an RPO. They knew that was coming at times and was able to defend it there. So the numbers on the surface look good. 24 of 39, 305 yards and a touchdown. Had pressure in his face early when he threw an interception, but it just never really looked right for Kyle Trask in the Orange Bowl. The ball seemed to flutter at times or just plain off target. He did start 9 of 20, but hit his last six passes going into halftime. So he ended the first half 15 of 26 for 153 yards, one touchdown, one interception. And you thought, okay, he got in a groove here right before halftime, and we'll see the Kyle Trask that we've seen all season. But the offense sputters to start the second half, and whatever it was, Will, you know, maybe it was just an off night for Trask.
Yeah, and it happens if that's the case. But you're right. I thought his touch was just uncharacteristically off a little bit, just off target with some throws, leading guys a little bit too far in a couple of those early ones. And the pressure, I thought, really got to him. And that's, you know, Virginia is known for that. And he knew it was coming, but I guess it was just different to kind of see it and have to throw against it. But yeah, definitely wasn't his typical performance. I'm with you. I think it probably was his worst performance of the season, it being in the Orange Bowl. That invites a whole bunch of offseason questions about what the best play is for Florida going into 2020. How much should we see Emory Jones versus how much we should see Kyle Trask this year? And I'll tell you what, it'll be interesting either way, just because I always have the feeling that, or I've had the feeling for the last few weeks now, that it's going to be a pretty decent quarterback competition between those two guys. And I would say that whether, Kyle Trask looked finer with his passing, or he had the game that he had last night, it would not have really changed my opinion a whole lot. The outlook for next year in regards to both those players, mainly because I just feel like Emory Jones should be at the point of his development where he can be tasked with higher expectations and a stronger grasp of the offense at this point.
Yeah, I do feel good in saying that as well. He's at the point of his career now where if Kyle Trask is the starter next season, then there is something to wonder about. What you know, will he ever be ready? I've been of the belief, you know, it may be hard to pull Kyle Trask for what he did this year and him not be the starter next year, but I think it's going to be a competition. I still think Kyle Trask was the best quarterback option for the 2019 season. Doesn't mean he'll be the best option for the 2020 season. We'll see. We'll see how it all plays out. I think there will be a competition in the spring. I don't know how open it is. And I would assume if you know, with eagle eyes, we'll be all looking who's going to take the first snap in that spring rep. I would assume it's going to be Kyle Trask, but you know who knows and how all this is going to work itself out. But I do think it's a competition going into next season. I'm not going to be surprised either way. If it's Kyle Trask taking the first snap in the first game next season, I won't be surprised. If it's Emory Jones taking the first snap, I won't be surprised. Ultimately, and we will have plenty of time, offseason time to talk for this. Ultimately, we know Dan Mullen's offense will work better with a mobile quarterback. That doesn't mean it's the best right now.
For sure, yeah. I think you nailed it when you said that Kyle Trask was the best option for this particular team and this particular personnel. Because if you look at the bevy of wide receiver options, it worked out. He was the guy that delivered the ball to them early, often, consistently. All of it. And their running game was not existent after the first three or four games. That became painfully obvious. And so would that have changed all that much if Emory Jones was in there, you know, for 15, 20 more snaps than he usually was? I don't think so. Just because you're going to have to rely on that offensive line to make some blocks still. And that was something that they were not able to do, particularly early on in the season. So I think that, with the style of offense that Dan Mullen runs, Emory Jones obviously presents that rushing threat from the quarterback position that the defense has to account for. That's a big MO of that offense. But I think the smart money would be on Kyle Trask probably still keeping the job, just because he did so much, and it's going to be hard for you to take that away from him. But I also think that the smart money is also on these guys kind of sharing the role a little bit again, just like we saw this past season, just probably more snaps probably toward Emory Jones in that sort of situation.
Yeah, I think one thing's pretty clear what we've seen from these first 2 years for Dan Mullen. He values experience. I know Kyle Trask doesn't have, or coming into this season, didn't have more starting experience than Emory Jones, but still – experience overall and being in college football just a bit longer. So I don't know how much that played into it, but you can tell from the first two seasons, experience is a huge part of Dan Mullen in picking a quarterback.
Yeah, and the thing with Emory Jones is, and I'm a big fan of his, and I do think he has a lot of talent, but we just don't know that all that much about him to be sort of clamoring for him to be starting, just because you don't know what kind of decision maker he is. You don't know how accurate he can be on a consistent basis. And those are two major things. You don't know how he is in the huddle, during a pivotal stretch of a game. And those are huge question marks.
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, I think in regards to what you just said, the closest we got to that was the Auburn game when we thought Kyle Trask may be out for a little while with an injury. The injury looked serious at the time. And hey, look, Emory Jones comes in, critical time, needs to get down the field. He puts together a couple string of passes, and Florida drives down the field and kicks a field goal in a close game. So there's just one example of it. But as you said, we probably need to see more before we can say for sure that is the best option moving forward for the 2020 season. So back to Trask here. You know, after taking over for Florida's offense to start the fourth quarter at Kentucky, Trask finished the season 233 of 349, so that's good for 66.8%. So basically 67% passer there for Kyle Trask for 2,901 yards and 24 touchdowns. Add four rushing touchdowns to that as well. Gators have 8 300-yard passing games in a season for the first time since 2001 and for the fourth time since the start of 97 season. And Florida also reached that total seven times in 1999 and nine times in 98. And here we go. Kyle Trask is the first Gators quarterback since Chris Leak in 2004 to post four 300-yard passing games in the season. So, Will, the season's over with, and not sure. We'll get into it with some of the Twitter comments, some of the listeners sent. But No telling where the season would have went if Kyle Trask wouldn't have stepped in so admirably after Felipe Franks goes down.
Yeah, no doubt. That's the story. That's the story of the season by a long shot. That's the turning point. That's where everything changed, and that's what saved the season for Florida. No doubt about it. But also the other side of that story, though, is that group of wide receivers. I mean, there were guys that they were able to rely on play after play, and we saw that even in the Orange Bowl, where fourth and eight, what's the play? It's a passing play, and Freddie Swain makes it with a slant over the middle, one-on-one coverage. We saw other instances of that. I mean, they relied on Van Jefferson to get that drive going, and he stretches the field for a big pass and catch play. So, I mean, there's just example after example, and I know you could kind of throw the Michael P. right into that mix as well, but just speaking strictly of those wide receivers, they were always a big part of it, and I think that they just found the right guy to deliver them the football on a consistent basis, and that was Kyle Trask.
Absolutely. So, Will, looking at the game more specifically again here, it was the second quarter where Florida just dominated the game. It was the difference in the game here. It was 14-7 heading into the quarter, and Virginia was driving for their second touchdown and scored on the first play of the quarter. But as a total, in the second quarter, the Cavaliers only ran 9 plays for 33 yards. And we'll get to the defensive struggles in a bit, but it was great for this quarter. Most telling stats were Florida holding the ball for 11 minutes and 6 seconds of the quarter. This was the beginning of a Florida kind of taking away momentum whenever Virginia would grab it. It was a tie game, but Florida goes on to dominate the quarter here. The Gators had 193 yards in the quarter, 12 rush attempts for 102 yards, 8 of 13 passing for 91 yards. The Gators averaged 7.7 yards per play, while Virginia averaged 3.7, so a 4 yard per average difference here for the Gators. And looking at the game as a whole, Will, this quarter right here is where Florida won the game.
Yeah, no, I think that what gets lost a lot of times in the fact of Dan Mullen's play calling is just his knack for really putting together and orchestrating those long drives that can really dictate the flow of a game. And I felt like they had one of those in that second quarter. And I thought that helped out the defense a little bit. I mean, obviously they still weren't that great in the second half, and it's not as if that completely changed the game by any means, but it allowed them to kind of stay off the field for a little while. And that's always helpful. So that's part of it. It was just another game where I thought it really just proved, not that he needs any more of these games, but just proved Dan Mullen's acumen when it comes to offensive football, play calling, and just understanding the momentum in terms of how you could kind of capitalize on things when things are going in your way and for your favor, and to kind of keep that going for you. I think he just put on another class of how to do that in this game against Virginia.
Yeah, and part of that too is you look at it, and Florida really only stopped themselves in the whole first half. The only time they didn't score on offense was when Kyle Trask threw the interception there. So it was Florida pretty much dictating what they wanted to do on offense. It didn't even look that great, but they were still scoring touchdowns and putting field goals on the board.
Yeah, no, it wasn't always that pretty. And I know some people kind of quibbled with, as always, the decision to put Emory Jones in the game. And after Kyle Trask finally did get going, with a couple of passes in a row. But, I'll go back to the idea of just wanting to extend that drive a little bit and kind of just, drag it out even a little bit more. That may have had something to do with it. I'm not sure. But and that's why you want Emory Jones in there to run the ball a little bit. It was just another game where you really couldn't question too much what Dan Mullen was doing offensively at all.
Right. So we'll go to the other side of the ball here. And, Bryce Perkins, quarterback for Virginia, he put on a show with the help of his wide receivers here. Multiple times he's evading would-be tacklers and throwing the ball to his wide receivers that just seem to catch everything. But if Virginia was going to beat Florida, it was going to be because of his legs. Florida held him in check there, and maybe at the detriment of the pass defense here. Cavaliers were 5-0 this season when Perkins ran for 60 or more yards. He had 24 net yards rushing and 41 if you take away the sacks. His threat running kept Florida in his own defense most of the night, really opened up the passing game. The linebackers spotted him close to the line of scrimmage, so he was able to fit passes with the safeties defending here. And, there wasn't a ton of man coverage because they just didn't want Perkins to kill killed them with their legs here. And maybe too much focus was put on that. I mentioned the jump balls that his wide receivers were able to come down with. And, you know, what a big game from Hassis Dubois. He was the wide receiver I featured last week on the podcast, and he showed up. He delivered here. He needed 21 more receiving yards to become just a fourth Cavalier to reach 1,000 receiving yards in the season. Well, he finished the night, 10 catches for 83 yards and two touchdowns. He had 65 receptions and zero drop passes on 65 catchable targets coming into the game. I don't think he dropped the ball last night either. So, you know, Will, this was an offense that kept, you know, just making play after play, especially in the fourth quarter. And look, they missed some opportunities as well.
Yeah, it's funny. I had a Florida defensive coach come up to me after the game and just go to me and say, you know, a win is a win, right? You know, and we're kind of take it. But yeah, they weren't too pleased with that performance at all. And it's like, where would they have been without Kyrie Elam? Yep. That's the one guy that you could kind of say, well, not the one guy, because other guys did play fairly well defensively, but he's the guy that you could say really changed that game from a defensive perspective on a positive note for Florida. He had the big interception, of course, but just even throughout the whole game, man, he made that one-on-one stop. That was super impressive early on in the game. Had a pass breakup after he allowed a catch because he slipped on a play previously. So He just played with a lot of competitive fire. So as much as it was a downer defensively for Florida, his performance, I just feel like it almost makes up for it just because it was such a breakout. And it's something that people wanted to see, especially when you don't know exactly what Marco Wilson's intentions are beyond this game in regards to his future with Florida, because you're already without CJ Henderson next year. So that was huge. But you're right. I mean, I think it was to their detriment, almost the amount of focus that Perkins got. But, you know, I guess it's almost like a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation, perhaps.
Yeah, you know, Thomas Goldkamp replied. I tweeted something similar to that. And he said, kind of reminded him of the Georgia game. They were so focused on stopping that Georgia run game that it kind of looked similar to that, that they let the big plays happen. They let the passing game kill them here. And for whatever reason, just wasn't able to put the complete package together here on defense. Yeah, we know you have to stop the run. We know you have to stop the running quarterback. But so many jump balls that Virginia wide receivers come down with. And credit to them. Look, I mean, I knew coming into this game that they were good. This Virginia offense was based on – they weren't running the ball either like Florida. They were ranked in the hundreds rushing the ball, and the reason that they were winning games was because of quarterback play and wide receiver play. And they go three deep there where guys can make plays, and we saw that in person last night there with the play that they were able to make. And like you said, you know, I come into the episode here and speaking of, especially on the offense where it was kind of senior-led and the seniors making the plays, but – Kyrie Elam was the best defensive back on the field for the Gators last night. Wasn't even really close, and may have been the best defensive player overall for Florida on the field last night. And look, we were discussing, you know, a glimpse into next season. Well, as you said, he was the shining star there.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm quickly scanning my mind for a guy who you could even place in that discussion. I really have a hard time coming up with somebody, really. I know David Reese made a couple of nice stops early in the game. Pass rush was a mixed bag a little bit. Nobody in particular, I feel like, had a major game. So, yeah, man, I'm with you. I think he had an excellent performance, of course. That's obvious. And just going forward into next year, man, it really profiles for – you know, just a major season for him where he's on the cusp of maybe superstardom, because if you look at his season, he had a great year. It's just the fact that he didn't play a whole lot.
Yeah.
If you look at his advanced statistics, if you look at his game-by-game breakdowns, guy didn't allow much of any catches this year. The only kind of catches that he allowed were ones that were the smart ones to give up anyway, where it was like a third and long situation and he's keeping the ball in front of him before a first down, or well short of a first down, I should say. So those are the right plays in those situations. And that's really the only catches that kind of come to mind. And I don't recall him really getting beat severely on anything. It's going to happen, of course, but none of that comes to mind. So it's just a breakout performance in a bowl game, which is really nothing new for a Florida defensive back, I guess, but always good to see for Florida, particularly when it's a guy like Kyrie Elam who had that pedigree. You kind of knew that he was always going to be good. But for him to step up on a big stage and deliver is just, you know, all the more for optimism heading into 2020.
And I'm glad you brought up David Reese and what he was able to do, because it was very noticeable here. first touchdown of the game, LaMichael Pirine, 61-yard touchdown run. A very first defensive drive, Virginia's third and short, and who's in there making the tackle to make Virginia go three and out on the first play of the or the first drive of the game? It's David Reese back there making that tackle and keeping, you know, and making Virginia have to punt the ball on their first drive. So, you know, good for those in their last game, those seniors, to really be able to go out on a high note again. And it was just very noticeable what David Reese was able to do and how integral he was. And look, I just got through talking about how much focus they put on stopping Bryce Perkins in that quarterback run game. Well, David Reese was a big part of that.
Yeah, and it kind of scares you if you're affiliated with Florida, just because who's going to be like David Reese next year? I don't know if you have 100% a guy like that. I guess Ventrell Miller is the one that profiles the most.
Yeah, he had 8 tackles last night.
Yeah, he had a nice game, I thought. Yeah. He put together a pretty good season as well in 2019, showed a lot of improvement as the season went on. And so I think he's a surefire starter for you next year. And I guess the question is, you know, who is he going to be paired with? Probably a combination of guys headlined by maybe James Houston, I suppose, depending on where they want to fit Amari Burney. And,
how quickly does Derek Wingo make a
– Yeah, Derek Wingo and Hopper for that matter too. Yep. Who redshirted this past season. So they have some options there, but it's just like you knew exactly what you were getting out of David Reese, and he was just automatic to an extent against the run, I felt like. And you just don't have a guy like that in 2020, or not yet at least, unless somebody emerges or improves that much more.
Yeah, and look, I think since Florida did such a great job in holding Perkins from going crazy on the ground, it limited their sack numbers, because I think they'd you could tell there was a lot of contain in making sure he wasn't going to be able to get loose. Now, they should have had a couple more than the 3 that they had, because Perkins was back there making guys miss, as I said earlier, and throwing the ball up and receivers making plays. Virginia had given up 38 sacks on the season coming into the game, but Grenard and the return of Jabari Zuniga were definitely felt. Grenard, I thought he wasn't going to come back into the game when he limped off the field and what looked like another ankle injury for him that he's been dealing with all season. But as soon as it looked like he was done, here he comes back in and gets a sack. Then Zuniga, after a rough start, he settled in, made some plays in the backfield as well. I guess if we had known for sure, I pretty much knew Jabari Zuniga was going to play in this game here. But I think if we had known for sure that we were going to get the pairing of Grenard and Zuniga, we probably expected a little more. But as I said, Perkins was partly because of that and his playmaking ability.
Yeah, man, he's elusive. And also they did get into the backfield he escaped a little bit and made some throws. They capitalized on some of those too, with just having a couple of bigger body wide receivers and making some plays and whatnot. But yeah, and like you said, the focus was to kind of contain him and not let him beat you. So that was a win in that sense of it. But yeah, you would have expected a little bit more from it. But again, I mean, Grenard was obviously still bothered by some sort of ankle injury that probably hindered him a little bit. But, you know, you look at it and just even like projecting it after this game and looking at it from next year, you mentioned Zuniga and Grenard. You know, I still like their where Florida is as far as defensive end and edge rusher next year, with, Carter probably stepping in for Zuniga, and a combination of Cox, Diabati, Bogle, and whoever else that they want to throw at edge rusher, Moon, of course, and whoever else they want to put out there. It's just different to me. When you look at like the linebacker position next year or some other spots, it's just not as susceptible to the major loss, as crazy as that sounds when you mention guys like Zuniga and Grenard.
Yeah, I think another question that begs here, Virginia's first touchdown comes off right after Kyle Trask has an interception, and Trey Dean is beaten the end zone for a touchdown. So Florida's going to have to figure out what they want to do with Trey Dean, where they want to stick him. Is it still cornerback? Is it nickel? Is it safety? They're going to have to figure some things out. Their cornerback, or especially definitely the nickel position, just didn't work out for him this year. We'll see. Florida looks like they need some help at safety after last night's game as well. They didn't have – they expected Brad Stewart to maybe take that next step this year. You saw glimpses last year in the Tennessee game and the crazy interception he had in that game, and then the LSU game and still in that, but nowhere near that kind of playmaking production this year from Brad Stewart. So Florida, we talked about Kyrie Elam, and he's definitely going to be one of the lockdown corner spots next year. There's no question there, but questions surrounding this secondary everywhere else, Will.
Yeah, and, you know, I just don't know what to do with Trey Dean just because I think he's talented.
Yeah.
It's just he's in a funk right now where it's like I don't know where you put him. It's certainly not at nickel. I don't think he wants to play there anymore. the season that he had, and I don't blame him. I think if you were to ask him where he wants to be as far as, you know, corner, nickel, or safety, I don't think nickel is number one on that list. It's probably number three, and for good reason. So it's kind of the question of, okay, well, what did they do then? And they have some options. I guess like Bernie's still an option. Yeah. One intriguing name for me is Chester Kimbrough. I think that he could have a nice role at the star position if that's what they want to choose to do with him. But it kind of depends on, there's just so many question marks before we can kind of really get into it, just because we just don't know, you know, how many corners are they going to need to, you know, are they going to have Marco Wilson or not? That's a huge question, of course. And that kind of dictates, I feel like, the rest of the personnel from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and of course, you know, what do, you know, you don't want to have to count on true freshmen, but, well, you know, what did the recruits do? What does Travis Johnson come in and do right away? You know, Finley Graham, Avery Helm, those guys, you know, what can they come in and do early on as well? So definitely a lot of questions there. I just think the only for sure answer is Kyrie Riddle.
So, for now.
Yeah, right. That for now, exactly. One day after the last game of the season, that's just kind of where it sits.
Maybe in a week or so.
Yeah. So that's kind of just, exactly where it stands right now. So let's get to some listener tweets here before we wrap up here this Orange Bowl episode of Gators Breakdown. Sarah Higgins says she feels thankful after Franks went down. I think if we were all honest, we'd say no one saw the season going this way. Can we improve? Definitely. But I'm thankful for a great season and another step forward. Mary Murphy Shannon says they look sloppy more into the game itself here. They look sloppy on both sides of the ball. P. Ryan was amazing, and Grenard and Edom were too. Van Jefferson is a winner. Great game, but I'm old and was stressful. Dan Mulling is amazing. So, I guess going back to your article last week in previewing this Orange Bowl matchup, and it was huge on the buy-in. And I don't want to relate the performance so much on buy-in from last night. I mean, you know, I have Florida winning by 20 in this game. That's kind of how I saw it coming. I know Virginia was coming off of a terrible performance in the ACC championship game against Clemson. Florida ended the season on such a high note. Offense was kind of humming along at that point. So, yeah, I get it. I know there's some disappointment with the way the game went. You were on a national stage. You were on primetime. You were the only game on TV. You would have liked a better performance out there, of course. But you know, I still think the buy-in was there. I don't want to necessarily say, oh, the players didn't care or whatever. They came out humming on offense, you know, even though it was clunky. They were still putting points up on the board. The third quarter didn't go necessarily the way we wanted to. They didn't come out of halftime the way we expect most Gator teams do on offense. But I have a hard time believing the buy-in wasn't there. You still went on and to win the game. You didn't play your best, but you still walked out a winner.
Yeah, I wouldn't pin it on that either. I'm pinning just more on mobile quarterbacks just not being all that kind toward Florida's defenses the last couple of seasons. And it was better this past season in some instances.
And even in expanding on that, even experienced quarterbacks, which Perkins is.
Sure, yeah. And so the combination is almost deadly for Florida. You know, it's just not great. And so that was my thinking. I think my expectation was for Florida to win by 13. That was the number that I kind of settled on heading into the game. I thought the spread was just a tad too high for me to be completely buying into it. But I thought 13, 12, something like that, I could kind of get down with, where we still that's kind of two-score game, but just not a complete blowout by any means. That's kind of where I thought it was. I maybe had a little bit more respect for Virginia than some other people. But it was just really because of Perkins for me. I just feel like he just presents such a difficulty for Florida's defense, and he was that it's just a tough player to defend against. So that's where I was at with it. I think the buy-in for me was more just about The guys actually showing up here and wanting to play the game. That was evident. And that's not something that should be taken for granted, because it's not the case at every school that's in Florida's position, where, you know, it's a glorified exhibition game at this point. You know, it's not something that's going to matter for you in terms of getting somewhere else. This is your final destination. And so whatever happens, this is it. But I feel like half the battle was getting these guys to actually want to play in the game. And that was undeniable from Florida's perspective.
Yeah, absolutely. Ryan at Go Gators for Life says, we won the Orange Bowl and finished with 11 wins. So it's a very good season. Tonight wasn't pretty for defense. Conservative play calling looked lazy at times, but offensively we had 550 yards. Imagine if we can build on this in our run game. Will be fun to see next year. Well, I think part of that, the run game, yes, it was good to see, but man, in looking at it, we saw a good bit of combinations from the offensive line last night and who they were lining up. You know, Heggie was on the right side at times, he was on the left side at times. You had Gene DeLance come out there, didn't look too pretty when he made his appearance out there at the right tackle spot. But you saw some combinations last night, and look, we'll see what happens with some red shirts as well, that Florida was able to redshirt some players. Maybe, you know, Michael Tarquin comes to mind there. You know, can Ethan White take another step with another offseason of conditioning and building up and experience for him? I don't think, you know, we'll have to replace Buchanan at center, but I'm not sure we can really pencil in a starting five for this offensive line right now next year.
Probably not, but I think your best case or your most likely case at this point is the combination that we saw. Or you know, there are five guys out of the combination that you mentioned that will be back next year, and I think those five guys probably are the best bets. I'm not saying they're the most talented. I'm not saying it's the best you know, configuration, but those are probably the best bets as far as who will comprise the offensive line. It'll probably be Ethan White and the four other guys who have been starting the rest of for the majority of the season, after Chris Fleisch's exit, of course, with Richard Garage. So that would be five. But that's not to say that those jobs are etched in stone by any means, just because at the tackle positions, it wasn't always consistent and it wasn't always pretty. It's just, I don't know if you could rely on a true freshman or one of the redshirt freshmen. I'm not sure if they're there yet in their developments at all. That's obvious for the true freshman. We don't know, but you know, if it was the case with the redshirt freshman, I think we would have seen them a little bit more.
Right.
We would have saw them kind of get involved a little bit later on to the season, because the one thing that we did see again was the constant, not juggling, but mixing it up here and there with the personnel. We saw that in the Orange Bowl, of course, but we saw that in the last couple of games of the regular season. So it wasn't like completely new. They did take out guys for a series here or a quarter there or a couple of series, and they mix it up a little bit in some of these last games. I think my overall point on the offensive line is, you know, in theory, it should be better, but we don't know. We just don't know. And I think it's kind of too easy to kind of say, oh, the offensive line is going to be better next year. You know, I think that it probably will, but we don't know for sure. And I think that you could really get in trouble by just automatically thinking that they're going to get better or that they're going to vastly improve from last year just because they're a bit more experienced. So all that to say, you know, if it's me, I look at almost, again, trying to get another transfer in there, or, you know, perhaps a graduate transfer or somebody like that, that could kind of add some quality depth to a group that still could use another guy like that.
Absolutely. Sir. Tampa Dad says, we had 4 wins 3 years ago. Now we have a 10 and 11 win season. After all the years of Muschamp and McElwain, I'm happy. When you win 11 games, they can't all be pretty. I like that part. So, you know, you get 11 wins. That's a lot of wins. You know what? More likely than not, they're not all going to be pretty.
Unless you're LSU.
But, you know, even they had a, what, 3-point victory over Auburn?
So, yeah, I guess the Ole Miss game was a little bit sloppy toward the end. But
It happened. But yeah, but speaking of that right now, they're on a whole nother level right now. So.
Yeah, it kind of makes you put that loss at LSU in perspective. Florida, just because nobody's been able to kind of hang with them at all.
Right. Whew, man. Joe Pisani says, great way to finish the season, but this also, here we go. This is a good point here. Great way to finish the season, but this also shows the separation from the elite teams. Florida has a ways to go, but Mullen is on the right track, just needs to keep recruiting. And it was one big takeaway because, as I said earlier, a lot of people were making assumptions based on this game with the way Virginia performed against Clemson. Well, Clemson's elite, and the final score of the ACC championship game was indicative of that. They're in the college football playoff national championship for a reason. They're an elite team. LSU, elite this year. You know, they're not that elite program. They recruit at a high level, but, you know, there was, you know, Florida beat that team last year, and they get the right combination of an offensive coordinator that's able to tap into Joe Burrow. And when you get some elite playmaking quarterback with the talent that LSU is able to bring in, then you get elite play. So, you know, we'll see how much Florida, you know, has to roster build to get in that situation. We know that has to happen first and foremost. But, yeah, when you start looking at what we saw this past weekend in the college football playoff and what Clemson was able to do to this same Virginia team, it is a pretty good indicator just how close Florida is but far away at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good point. I will say not so much to counter that point at all, but just I think the motivation is a little bit different when you're playing a regular season game and you're Clemson and your schedule is not doing you any favors and you really have to blow out teams like that. And then you kind of compare that to a team that's, like I said, playing a glorified exhibition game in a bowl game. The level of motivation is just not equivalent, I feel like. But again, the level of talent from Clemson and Florida is not equivalent either. And so that's part of it. That's a major part, probably a bigger part of it, is that there's still that gap that exists. And that's been the season long story. It's been the story ever since really Mullen took over, is, you know, the question of, you know, what's going to be the reason why he's unable to kind of get this program to an elite, you know, top five, top four status. And the only thing that I could kind of think of is, if the recruiting doesn't get up to that sort of level, that's the only thing that will hold this program back, because everything else is pretty much there for you. So that's the only thing they're going to have to, like you said, David, continue to add quality depth with blue chippers, which they've done somewhat in this class in 2020. But it's just, this has to be the start of it. I mean, like, it has to get better from here. It can't just remain status quo.
Right. Dustin Woolbright at Different Schrader 19 says, not the sexiest win, but love that we're 11-2 and ended the season on a high note. Here we go. Time to hit the trail and get ready for spring camp so we can get better. Cowtown Gator says, glad the program is back to the point of winning these kind of games with or without our best effort. Charleston Gator Club, nothing but good things to say. Lost to two good teams and we're in both of those games. A few years ago, losing our starting quarterback would have spiraled the team to a 4-win season. Instead, they persevered and improved from last year. Great foundation that Mullen is building upon. There you go, Will. It's kind of more of the point that you just said. We're building upon. This is a good starting point. This is a good foundation. These first 2 years, as I said, to put Florida in the spotlight, and I think the most important thing looking at it from a fan perspective is, man, Florida football is finally fun again.
Yeah, no, and I think that's a good point with just the quarterback position in particular, is that, you know, and you can say that's not a Florida problem. You know, that's a, you know, most teams would go through a 4-win season or something like that if their starting quarterback is out for the year by week 3 or whatever that week was, September 14th. That's just the way it is. Like, a lot of teams, especially nowadays, are just not constructed that way to have a guy or two guys that are capable of then stepping in like Florida had. It starts with those two guys being prepared for it, but it's also just like everybody knows, it kind of points to the coaching staff and the leadership at the top. So yeah, it's undeniable that Florida has, you know, some great leadership there, definitely bodes well. They're where they want to be at this point. But next year, it really ratchets up the expectation level for, okay, you know, a third New Year's Six wouldn't be having the same conversation, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, the big thing is getting over that Georgia hump. That's the big thing right now for these Gators. And next couple are in particular kind of looking at the game and the season itself, but kind of on the opposite spectrum here. He goes, happy with 11. I'm assuming Kyle Trask there. This is from Lundin Calling, David Lundin. Happy with 11, but disappointed with this game's performance. A lot of great seniors leaving and worried that the O-line didn't really progress during the year. So that is another point about this offensive line, Will, is I remember co-host, you know, Will Miles had a nice article on this offensive line, and he went back and looked at what Mullen and John Hevesy had been able to do. And I think it was 2017 year for Mississippi State where they were also replacing a whole slew of offensive linemen and how they were still able to get the run game going. And, you know, part of that was that Nick Fitzgerald there as a running quarterback and making things happen with his legs. So that plays a big part in it too. But, you know, also, yeah, I can see the look of, hey, this offensive line may start slow, but they'll get better as the season goes on. Well, didn't really get that chance to if you kind of wanted to take it that route as far as looking just at the run game because Florida just didn't do it. And I don't blame Mullen. He wasn't hard-headed to sit here and say, okay, I'm going to sit here and just try to run the ball time and time again just to see if we can get better at it. No, he's paid to go win games, and he was winning games by going out there and throwing the ball 40 times a game and throwing for 300 yards. So I still think, yeah, we would like to see the steps for this offensive line to get better in the run game, but also kudos to just not being hard-headed and trying it just for the sake of trying it.
Yeah, and I think that what kind of goes a little bit under the radar that kind of hindered their development, the offensive line, is, you know, I'm not sure, like, what the quality of practices that they've had because the depth really was lacking on the defensive line this year. That's not going to be a problem, or it shouldn't be a problem in the future because of the class that they signed. But this year in particular, like they just didn't have a whole lot of depth, and you know, a couple of guys were injured, and then so I mean, scout team was really comprised of a bunch of walk-ons, I guess, for the defensive line and practices, and that's what your first team is getting a look from. So I think that may have had a little bit to do with it too. Just a small reason that goes a little bit unnoticed and a little bit under the radar, but also the fact that, you know, we're not talking about 4- and 5-star recruits here at all five of those positions. So I think that's part of it as well, is that they needed some time. But again, I just go back to the idea that you got to have to see it first before we can kind of say, okay, this group is getting better or this group is definitely going to be better next year. I think that there's some really good pieces there. You know, I like Brett Hege. I think Ethan White has shown us that he has some great potential. Richard Garage had played really well once he became a starter. So there, you got some good pieces there that could kind of create some optimism for you. And so it's not the same exact group that it was back in August. But again, we have to see it. And we didn't really get the opportunity to see it just because, like you said, David, it wasn't as if they were running the ball all that much. So it's just, we don't know yet.
At Who's the Boss says, and it's kind of a popular subject here, it says Bryce Perkins was the third most efficient ACC passer. Yes, worse than Blackman and Jarrett Williams on the Gator schedule, and he played pitch and catch all game long. That's one where I'd say stats don't tell the whole story because Bryce Perkins is clearly better than those two quarterbacks. And it's not even close. And because if not for Kyir Elam heroics, we might not be celebrating win number 11. And in all caps, last part here, bring back Charlie Strong. So,
caps, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So here we go. Of course, Todd Grantham's going to be the looked at a lot here. Florida's two biggest games this year, LSU and Georgia. Wasn't able to get the job done. Not many people are stopping that LSU offense. So that, you know, that game right there, I mean, it's hard to look at and put all the blame on him there for what Florida's not able to do on defense, because Auburn's really about the only defense that slowed down that LSU attack. The Georgia game, you still held them to 24 points, but and go back and looking at that, still the third down defense was absolutely atrocious in that game. So, yeah, you don't get much of an excuse there, but 24 points still, in the grand scheme of things, is still a game you probably should win there. But then, of course, last night in the Orange Bowl, in the performance, we detailed why we think that may have happened in Bryce Perkins' legs in run games. So, and I had a conversation last night as well, you know, on social media, on Twitter about Grantham. And you know, I'm still more of a defender of Grantham and more of a supporter than Grantham than I'm not. But I do get the ire because of the two biggest games this year where the defense didn't get the job done, and then last night's Orange Bowl.
Yeah, but I think what you said is true, and I don't think it's making up excuses for or really anything that's not you know, just well thought out, because it's like, you know, LSU in Baton Rouge, I mean, you're just not stopping that team this year. So I think that you can kind of cancel that one out almost. Now, do you want one stop or, you know, one or two stops? And that could have made a world of a difference for you. Yeah. Sure. And so that's probably, you know, the counterpoint that's definitely valid is that, you know, you should have been able to at least stop them once or twice. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's something that should happen for you. And then the Georgia thing with the third downs, another one that's sort of on the level of inexcusable where you kind of have to get some stops there. So, yeah, I get that part, and it hurts Florida fans just because those are your two losses and it's LSU and Georgia. But again, yeah, you just look at the overall body of work, though, and it's more good than bad, I would say, with Todd Grantham for sure. And again, it's like you weren't operating with a completely full deck there either. You had guys missing time. You didn't have a whole lot of depth. So, you know, you kind of – I don't want to say you're grading him on a curve, but you're not operating with a full deck, and there definitely was more – good than bad with Grantham, especially if you look at it in the perspective of both seasons.
All right, so last few tweets here is, you know, Grecio says, I can't remember gaining yards or scoring almost 40 points for that matter under McElwain. We won. Ask Oklahoma what an embarrassing effort feels like. So they got up enough to win a game that they probably didn't want to play in, nor did the fan base want to see. Gators had a good showing there, from what I could tell, on TV there. So the fans traveled, most of them, because it was an easy drive there. So pretty good showing there for the Gator crowd in the season finale. Sunshine State Champion says, it's finally over, Dave. I wanted improvement. 11-2 is exactly that. Now to see what improvement can be made going into 2020, a new decade and new horizons for Gator football. Good point here with wanting to see improvement this year. And I remember coming into this season, Will, and of course, you go into every season and what are the expectations? And year one under Dan Mullen, it was to just kind of shed what was going on in Jim McElwain, show progress. And you showed progress enough to win 10 games and win a New Year's Six game. In year two, it was about – still progress, but in the way of you need to take care of business against teams that you need to beat. You can't have the Kentucky performance from last year. You can't have the Missouri performance from last year. And that's exactly what they did this year. That was me. I remember doing an episode on it and asking fans' opinions, and that they agreed with me. And without even kind of leading them that way, that was the way most fans thought too. They wanted to see Florida beat the teams that they were supposed to beat, and that happened this year. Now, you could say Georgia was a team you were supposed to beat by the way they played this year, leading up to the Florida game, and after the Florida game as well. But still, in the grand scheme of things, that was probably about as close to 50-50 of a ball game there. So, you know, for the most part, I think most fans can feel content of, you know, Florida did what they were supposed to do this year.
Yeah, that was the hallmark of this year's team, is that they thoroughly beat teams that they were supposed to beat, whether it was Tennessee or, you know, the non-conference games that they played. And they beat the tough team that many thought they would beat, which was Auburn at home. So that was another win that they should have had that they did get. And as far as the Georgia game goes, the Gators at the time were the trendy pick for a lot of people, myself included. But I think the spread indicated that Georgia was still the favorite in that game. So it wasn't exactly, to your point, the type of game where they were expected to win or supposed to win, I guess, is the best way to put it. So I'm with you. I think that was probably one of the baseline expectations, is to clean up those type of losses that we saw not only with Kentucky but Missouri as well last year. Didn't see that happen this year. So that was huge for Florida. And then going forward next year, like you mentioned earlier, you got to beat Georgia this time. That's in year three under Mullen, that has to be the thing that happens.
Yeah, and going back to what we just described and what Florida was able to do this season, they did it in a different way than we imagined. It wasn't Felipe Franks, the quarterback, leading their charge. Kadarius Toney was on the sideline for a lot of the season. Henderson missed some time there. You had some Grenard and Zuniga weren't 100% at the time. You barely got Zuniga for most of this year. So Florida was still able to live up to the expectation, live up to the building of a top 10 team, and did it in ways we couldn't even imagine.
Yeah, and also, I mean, C.J. Henderson missed some time too for a little while. So it was like we're talking about now three, four, almost maybe you want to even include Amari Burney in there who missed some time, and he was an important player. So, you know, you have this like group of like super important players that if you were to put out the preseason list of, hey, these are the most important players for your program heading into 2019, a lot of those guys didn't play a whole lot, and a lot of them didn't have the impact that many expected them would. So that's, you know, a testament for what Florida should have, or at least does have with Dan Mullen and his staff. And just a good sign for you in 2020 when the expectations are again going to be raised.
Yeah, as you said, if you put those guys on a list, if you put those guys on a list before the season, hey, these guys won't be available, nobody would have picked 11 wins for these Gators.
Probably not. I mean, you could just put like two of them. You could put Zuniga and Franks probably and say, okay, all of a sudden you're, you know, in the middle of a Kentucky game, what's your record going to be if you lose those guys? And it's probably not pretty.
Right. So, all right, we'll wrap up this episode here. I know you released an article this morning on The Athletic. What you got coming up to finish off this Gator season?
Yeah, that pretty much finishes it off. But, you know, already going into 2020, we just caught up with some guys who just finished up their freshman year at Florida. So Ethan White, I spoke to him and had a really good chat with him. So I'll be working on a story on his season from his perspective, which obviously is a great story that a lot of people are interested in. So I'm eager to write that one, and just sort of revisiting what they have in the secondary with Trey Dean and Chester Kimbrough, and of course Kyrie Elam as well. So those are probably two of the most pressing things I have on deck, with some more fun stuff throughout January and February coming up.
Yeah, hopefully for Gator fans, I don't know if we'll do a story on it, but I'm sure we'll be noticing it. Well, keeping a close eye on the Xavier Henderson commitment this weekend at an All-Star game. So I know there was some drama on Twitter with me on that.
I wrote about it last week, right? You know, I kind of put it out there that, hey, these are the reasons why he's considering Clemson. These are the reasons why he's considering Florida. So, you know, that was – put it this way, I went there for a reason, you know. Yeah. I went to the Daytona to see him play for a reason. I felt like Florida had a decent shot with him, and there's been some ebbs and flows since that game, but it's shaping up to be quite the interesting weekend.
Right. You know, Rivals had put out an article that Florida was no longer in the mix. Amended it. Florida is in the mix with Clemson. They also said Alabama and Georgia, but it really looks to be a Florida-Clemson battle with some recent crystal balls on the 24/7 Sports Network of Henderson choosing the Gators. So that's the recent news that'll be coming up that we'll hit next week on Gators Breakdown, taking a look at that. And, well, here we come, recruiting full bore.
Oh, yeah, man. It doesn't get any better. But, hey, it's pretty much already over. But this makes it a little bit more exciting, though, when you only have these couple of spots left and you really want to hit on a couple of these key positions, for wide receiver and running back, if we're talking about the Gators.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that's Will Salmon. You can find him at The Athletic. Go out there, download The Athletic app, visit theathletic.com to get all of Will's great work and great college football coverage there as well. I'm Gators. I'm the host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.